This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen, and I stopped drinking alcohol almost exactly 7 years ago. When I stopped drinking, I really felt a lot of benefits. My health was better, my finances were better, my attention was better, and I really felt like I started to kind of grow up as a person. At times, it was still difficult. At times, even now, I feel like sometimes it's hard to explain to people why I don't drink. And sometimes still, I feel like I'm a bit alone on this journey. But a couple of years ago, I found Over the Influence, and that really changed things a lot for me. And I just felt like I wasn't alone in this journey anymore. It's just so nice to have this massive connection with all these like-minded people. Come along to Over the Influence and be part of an amazing community.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome to Over the Influence. It is, I'm going to say it, I don't care, possibly the world's best alcohol-free podcast, hurtling towards 300,000 downloads since we started
it,
singing.
We passed it.
We haven't.
Sorry, I haven't given you an update for a while. Yeah, no, honestly, there's people finding us every single day at the moment. This whole alcohol-free life thing, people are starting to cotton on. It's spreading.
That's amazing. That is brilliant. What a way to start this episode of the pod. Well, we will continue to keep wanging on about sobriety and singing about all things alcohol-free life. If you are just joining us for the first time, maybe you are sober curious or just starting out on an alcohol-free journey, or as one of our community members calls it, an adventure, an AF adventure. Welcome. It's really lovely to have you listening. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. Come September, I will be 4 years alcohol free. It's just ace. Every time I say it, I've always got a really big smile on my face. I'm very, very proud. I was a daily drinker, ramped it up at weekends, and I thought, you know what? There's got to be another way. I'm just going to dabble with this alcohol-free life. And here I am nearly 4 years later, absolutely flipping loving it. I don't do this on my own. It's my accidentally sober co-host, Ben. Your story's just the best, Ben.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, accidentally sober in the sense that I started producing this podcast called Over the Influence as a drinker, just as a job. And it just kind of just got into my head and I thought, I've got to give this a go. And I took a 3 month break from alcohol because I didn't have a drink problem, but drink was causing me problems. And I didn't really recognise that until after I'd given it up and it was out of my system. But I'm so glad that I did that 3 months because it led to 6 and then 12. And then I got to day 366 and thought, this suits me and I'm not going back to drinking. I'm hugely passionate about that, actually, that you don't have to have a rock bottom to rethink your drinking. And I hate that as a narrative in society. I think that anybody can benefit from giving up alcohol, no matter what your current relationship with alcohol is like. Amazing things happen when you give up booze. And like today, because I cannot believe that we're speaking to somebody. Shaz, when you sent me the email to say that this person was coming on, this person was a huge part of my childhood. And I am so excited to be speaking to them today. I'm beaming. It's so cool.
You're going to fanboy your way through this. I can tell. And if you're of a certain age,
I'll try my best not to. Yeah.
Well, let's.
If you're a kid, if you're a child of the 90s like me, then you will know this man.
So I think that's where we'll start, actually. First of all, before we get carried away and before Ben starts talking about all Hollywood films and the Mighty Ducks, which we're going to have to talk about, Sean, I'd love to welcome our guest to the episode of the podcast today, based in California. I mean, this is so showbiz. It gives us great pleasure to welcome Sean Weiss, Hollywood actor. Welcome to the pod. Sean, before we go any further, I do hope that you can understand our strange accents.
Yeah, well, I put the captions on just when we started talking. So if I can't understand anything, I can always just read it on the bottom.
Brilliant. Well, it's fantastic to have you here. As Ben mentioned there, if you don't mind, before we talk about your own addiction struggles and your recovery, which is absolutely incredible, can we just rewind to 1992, please? Which is, we're talking 30 years ago, child star, Mighty Ducks. Just tell us about that. Just take us back to when you were 12 years old.
That was just such an amazing time in my life when I look back. It really was just a wonderful part of my childhood, and I really have just nothing but warm memories. The family that I have today, I really don't have a lot of family, so most of my family, there are the guys that I did those movies with. They're my closest thing that I have to family around, so I'm thankful for that. And definitely, without those movies, I don't think it would have been possible for me to recover in the way that I did, because largely I drew a lot of my strength early on from the support that I got from people. So it really, those movies for me have been the gift that keeps on giving. So 30 years later, I was able to just receive a second life from it. So those movies were a lot of fun. I guess I started when I was 13, and we did one every 2 years, so we did three of them. So from 13 to 17, every year or so, we'd get together and make another one, and it was just the most fun thing ever. And it got me, I had been acting since I was 5 years old, and I was doing commercials. Wow. and TV shows, but when I did the Mighty Ducks, it really cemented it in my mind that that's what I wanted to do when I grew up. You know, being in those movies. So it made me fall in love not only with the movie business, but also the game of hockey. When I got those movies, I was very upset. I was like, why couldn't I have been in a baseball movie or a football movie? Because I just didn't like hockey. And throughout making those movies, I fell in love with the game. So it was just, just a magical time for us. And I think that magic is contained in those movies, and I think that's what makes them so special, and I think that's why people, why people relate to them so much.
Well, I forced the kids to watch them at Christmas because we were looking through, and we said, I can't find anything to watch, and I went, you know what, let's go back to my childhood. And they stand up. These movies still stand up, you know, and it's because they are. I'm so glad to hear that you are in touch with a load of the people who are on them, because it's just, if you haven't seen the movie, it's about a team of, it's misfits, isn't it? About a group of misfit children who don't really, they're not the cool, popular kids, but they end up coming together, working together. And of course, there's a happy ending, but I'm not going to spoil it for those who haven't seen it, because I thoroughly recommend you go back and watch all three Mighty Ducks movies. But it's just, it brings joy to my heart to know that you're still in touch with a load of those guys.
Thank you. Yeah, we're actually meeting up, a few of us, in New Jersey next week. It's about a 3,000-mile trip for me, but we're all going to meet up at an autograph signing. So we get to meet up, a few times a year. But thank you for showing your kids those movies, because you're keeping the dream alive. And as long as I know your kids are watching them, I know I'll still have some residual checks coming in the mail.
Oh, it's so good. Look at Ben. He's smiling so much. It's fantastic. Sean, thank you. We've got so much to talk about. Can I just explain the reasons why I wanted to invite you on the pod? I was scrolling through social media, and I must have followed you or something or other. And it was a few months ago, because we've been trying to get this date in the diary for a while. And I saw your photographs on social media. So it was you pictured as a child in those movies that we've just talked about, sort of at the height of your fame as a child actor in Hollywood. It was the picture of you at, I don't know how to describe it, possibly one of the lowest points in your life. And then side by side with that was a picture of you now. And I was just staring and I thought, that can't be Sean Weiss. That's not Sean. Oh my goodness me, it is. And I had literally no idea of what had happened, you know, with your life over the last however many years. And I just want to, if you don't mind, just share a little bit of an email exchange that we sent to each other. And I said to you, Sean, would you mind just telling us a little bit about your journey and where it started? And you just say here that my struggle with addiction began with alcohol. The day my mother died, I chugged a pint of vodka. Is it okay with you if we start with that and talk about those reasons?
I think that's an appropriate place to start, because that's where addiction started for me. And I think alcohol is, you know, probably the jump off point for most people. And it's one of the things that's most accessible. And it's probably one of the things that people are most addicted to. So I think alcohol would be a good place to start.
How old were you?
I guess I was in my early 30s. Everything's kind of a blur, but I was in my early 30s when she died, and I had always drank for fun. I guess I started, my parents had a liquor cabinet at my house growing up, and I guess around 12 or 13, me and my friends started dipping into the liquor cabinet, and then we would get drunk on the weekends and then refill the bottles with water, and just doing that type of shit. But then when my mom died, it was just such a painful blow, one that I never felt anything even close to. And I just instinctively picked up an alcohol bottle, chugged it, and I went to the liquor store. And I remember that day very much, because that's when my real drug problem started. And I knew it on that day. I knew when I had chugged that bottle, I knew I was in for a long road ahead. So, you know, you should definitely pay attention to your inner voice. You know, I wish I'd have listened to my inner voice at that point. But so many things were, alcohol definitely became the problem. But at that point, it was my solution. So I don't know how else I would have dealt with that crippling depression, crippling anxiety, if I hadn't had the bottle to help me with that. So, I mean, I was just devastated, you know, and if I hadn't had alcohol, I would have just, I don't know, I just would have probably turned into a hermit or something. So, yeah, I started drinking, and I mean, stayed drunk all day. From the time I woke up, I would get sick, I would vomit, and I would drink a bottle of vodka, and this is how my day would start. And, you know, I would get drunk around 11 p.m., and God forbid I woke up before the liquor store closed, because I would have to get to the liquor store before 2 a.m. This is how I carried on for years, until I literally had pickled my insides to the point where I couldn't even drink water. It hurt so bad just to drink water. I didn't go to the doctor, but probably I had pancreatitis or something like that. And I was literally on the floor of my bedroom in my apartment for days. And it was at this time that my dad started becoming ill, and he and I were living together, and I had to get him to a doctor's appointment. And there was a bottle of Vicodin on his table, and I'd never even taken a painkiller, maybe at a dentist appointment or something. But I'd never even taken a painkiller. And so in order to get rid of this pain that I had given myself with my constant consumption of alcohol over years, I took my first Vicodin to get rid of that pain. And that is what started me on my opiate problem. But definitely the symptoms that caused my opiate problem were the same as, you know, that existed for the alcohol. So really, the substance might have changed from alcohol to harder drugs, but my usage of them were the same. I used them to escape my own stressful life situations.
Sean, it's so much to talk about already. I think when you're saying that alcohol, it's one of the most accessible kind of forms of self-medication, you're absolutely right. I also think it's one of the most accepted forms as well. You know, when a tragic event like that happens, it's not uncommon that people say, you need a drink, let me get you a drink. It's almost like the first thing that people say, you know, let's get you a drink, mate. You know, sit down, let's have a drink. And so therefore, it's not just accessible, it's accepted. And then not just accepted, it's then also kind of pushed on you in those kind of situations too. It's really interesting what you said about that inner voice and listening to that inner voice at the beginning. It's so, for me, I didn't have a major trauma, which I feel very lucky that I didn't have a major trauma. I was, in my 20s, I was drinking because it was fun. In my 30s, I was drinking because I was stressed. And there was a fundamental change there. And not one that I actually realised was happening until I removed alcohol and looked back. What kind of things was that inner voice saying to you then? On that day where you were going to the liquor store, what could you hear?
Well, I just knew that if I didn't, allowed myself to do this on that day and I didn't have the internal strength to not do this, that it was going to become a problem. So then I knew that I couldn't carry on like this every day, but I knew that if I didn't have the strength to not do it on that day, that I probably am not going to have the strength to not do it on the next day. And so, you know, like you say, it's, you know, alcohol is an accepted thing. I feel like, unfortunately, and I'm going to say this now because I don't want it swimming around in my head for the entire time we're talking, but on the intro, you spoke about you hope people don't have to have a rock bottom in order to change their things around. And I was just making some notes the other day in terms of some things that I think could be helpful for people trying to recover. And it dawned on me that, unfortunately, I don't know that it's possible for one to even attempt sobriety without a rock bottom. Because then what is the, you know, why not? Why not have a few drinks after work? So, you know, in the 12-step program, which I don't really talk about a lot, but it's definitely the thing that saved me. In the 12-step program, they talk about very, very early on being able to admit when your life has become unmanageable. So I guess that's what my inner voice was trying to tell me that day, is your life is about to become unmanageable. And I also knew that, you know, one of the reasons I kind of didn't let the wheels fall off the car, so to speak, earlier on, was because my mom was alive. And there were certain things that I would do when she was alive there's certain things I wouldn't do when she was alive that I now had no one to, you know, to check me on these things. So I guess that was another a deterrent. But, I mean, it's definitely all along the way, always listen to your inner voice, because you really don't need a guru. You really don't need someone to ask questions of. If you get quiet enough, you'll find the answers to your questions right here.
Sean, sorry, Shaz, I will let you speak in a minute. I apologise. I'm so excited that Sean's here. Sean, I think that's, in terms of the rock bottom thing, a friend said to me a long time ago, I didn't have a rock bottom, but I could see it from where I was standing. And there was a kind of consciousness that this is going one way. And if I carry on doing the same things that I'm doing, then rock bottom will come. And I think the reason I like to say that I want people to think you don't have to have a rock bottom to decide to change your relationship, is because of that quote. And it's because of what you've said. It's because you were walking to the store and you had that voice. That voice doesn't start at rock bottom. That voice can start weeks, months, years before that happens. So I think that's where I come from with it. And I think more and more, as we get into this podcast more, as we speak to more and more guests, you realise that there is no such thing as an alcohol problem. It's not defined as one thing with one set of symptoms. With, you know, it's different for everybody. It's different for absolutely everybody. But I think one common thing is that inner voice. You've got to listen to that voice. If you feel it, if you can just feel it nagging in the back of your head, if you feel like, oh God, something needs to change here, it probably means that it does.
Well, you seem like an intelligent man and someone that, you know, can sense that the stove is hot by watching somebody else touch it. That's a sign of intelligence. So sensing that you're heading towards rock bottom and being able to have that register enough. I mean, but these are things like, how are these things meaningful in any way to someone who's in the middle of addiction? I don't know. One thing that helped me a lot in recovery was they showed us a video where they talked about the hedonic scale. And the hedonic scale, basically, it quantifies like someone's pleasure. So just say on an average day, Paul is on an average day, just going through life, everything's fine. His number, and I have the numbers wrong, just go with me. His number is at 80. If he's depressed, his number is at 60. If he's just fallen in love and he's about to make it with a woman, his number is 120. If he does meth, that number is 1,200. So that's what we're dealing with when we're talking about quitting substances. You can get somebody to be abstinent and not want to like do it for a while. But how do you get someone to not want to feel 1,200 ever again? It's almost inevitable that they're going to relapse. So what helped me tremendously was understanding that I could get to 1,200 internally without putting substances in me. And it's not easy, but it can be done. And I started doing yoga and things like, but I had an experience where I had that 1,200 turned on accidentally inside of me just by accident. And I went Googling around on the internet to try to find out what had happened to me. And I found out that basically some things in yoga had happened to me. So it got me off on this pursuit in yoga because I want to feel that 1,200 again. There's never going to be a day where I'm just not going to ever want to feel that 1,200 again. So what keeps me recovered or helps me stay recovered is the belief that I can get to that 1,200 again without substance.
Talk to you about the distinction that so many people make. They say it's alcohol and drugs and they are two different things. Listening to what you've been talking to us about, it sounds unlikely, and now correct me if I'm wrong, that the drugs wouldn't have happened without the alcohol. You've talked there about basically that when your mother very sadly passed away when you're in your 30s, it was the vodka. And then it was the bottle of painkillers on your dad's bedside table and then the opiates. But aren't they one in the same? There's this distinction that it's alcohol and drugs, but sort of one led to the next. It's just on a varying scale of addictive substances.
For me, they definitely, unequivocally, were one in the same. They just were all ways for me to numb myself, both from psychological situations and physical situations. My pain that I had given my pancreas from the alcohol and the trauma that I'd gone to. So, and also because I'd been having a drink my whole life and smoking some pot, I was just used to taking stuff. And my own concept of what self-health was and self-care was one that permitted the use of, you know, excessive alcohol and tobacco and pot. So, you know, definitely I would not have just went from zero to hard street drugs if I hadn't. And definitely, you know, alcohol also put me in a situation where I was comfortable dealing with guys that might sell you street drugs. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was comfortable hanging out in a bar, and for years in my late 20s, I wasted too many nights on a bar stool. God, I wish I could have those nights back, you know, where it was just wasted time, and I had fun, and I had a great time, and there is something to be said for that, you know. Not everybody that has a drink is going to have it end up into some kind of destructive behavior, but they tell us that we have a gene. I don't know about that. That's a concept that I struggle with because my parents weren't addicts. They never drank, so it's hard for me to reconcile that part. But definitely, Shaz, the alcohol and the drugs. They represented the same thing to me. They were tools that got me to the same place, and ultimately, they all end up in the same place. All with drugs or alcohol, they all lead to the same three places, which is institutions, jail, or death.
And I also want to ask you, Sean, about the support you had and people's reaction to you when you found yourself in this place. You know, we talked at the beginning of our chat about the child star of Hollywood and how you had an amazing time and what a gift that must have been. Fast forward 30 years and you find yourself addicted to drugs and alcohol at a very low point in your life. There is so much stigma attached to an addict of any sort, but particular drugs and alcohol. What were people's reactions to you? Did people give a shit or did they want to help?
Do you mean what was their reaction to me like after I got in trouble, or are you asking what was their reaction to me while I was on the street being homeless?
All of it, Sean. There's a lot to talk about.
Well, I was shocked. I guess I got into this trouble after 1,000 hours of therapy. I was able to isolate the fact that I had just a very severe depression, and I was probably suicidal. So I didn't just want to die, but I just didn't really have any zest to live. So part of that situation, I think, was caused because I got it into my head that nobody cared about me. And I think that's a common problem that leads to mental illness. When people are homeless and they start to think that nobody cares about them, it's a very slippery slope. So I was in that mode of thinking that nobody cared about me. My family didn't care about me. Nobody cared about me. And when I found out that people did care about me, and a lot of people cared about me, and cared in such a way where they genuinely felt bad about the position I was in and wanted to see me do well, it took me, you know, weeks probably to just come to terms with that. Because, you know, early on, I was in a jail cell. I remember when I got arrested, I was very sick because I was dope sick, and I was laying in on my metal bunk. And I had just gotten arrested maybe a day after, and the cops came into my cell with a picture on their cell phone, and he said, "Is this you?" And he had a picture on his phone of me in, the Mighty Ducks costume.
Oh, God.
And I was like, shit. Yeah, and I don't think I said anything. I just think I went back to bed. But, so, you know, I felt a lot of this support when I needed it the most, very early on when I was just struggling to just care to live. I was locked in a jail cell. That's the one thing that I found ironic. They won't even let you die. You can't die on drugs. They will arrest you. You're not allowed to do that in the United States. If they catch you after you've done it, then that's fine. But if they see you, they will not let you. But anyway, so yeah, all the support, I heard people telling me all the time, well, your recovery can't be about other people, but I didn't really care about myself early on. So it was a lot, I stayed sober just so I wouldn't let my fans down. Yeah, I just feel like a total, I'd feel like a total douchebag, especially after everyone's put in all this time and energy and love and support. I would hate to have them read some headline one day about me relapsing. I mean, that's kind of amazing, right? That, you know, the social media and a fan base from 30 years ago is what keeps me in line.
Social media gets a lot of bad press these days, but, you know, there are some really powerful things that can happen as a result of it. It's connection, isn't it, at the end of the day? I mean, Sean, when did this news start kind of feeding into you that people did care about you and were concerned about you? Do you remember when it first started and that kind of mindset began to shift? Actually, there are people out there who want me to do well?
Yeah, I was in the jail cell, and I was there for only a couple of days, and one of the deputies came in, and he was like, "You're on the news." I was like, "Really? I'm in jail. What did I do?" And he's like, you know, he's telling me that people are offering me to send me to rehab and that people want me to do well. And so right when I was in jail, that really lifted my spirits, just finding out that people knew what was going on outside. It was very frustrating because, you know, I didn't have a chance to defend myself. I didn't have a chance to sort of, you know, say what I wanted to say. It would have been all bullshit and lies, but still, I didn't have a chance to, like, speak up. And so I just had to surrender because it's very strange having people talk about some horrible thing that's happened to you in the press. So finding out that there was a supportive thread running through that just felt good. It was reassuring and surprising because people typically don't get behind child actors on drugs. Typically, it's just, you know, some water cooler jokes. And luckily, thankfully, it wasn't that for me this time. And TMZ got behind me, and they, like, they must be Mighty Duck fans over there because they've been just very helpful to me. You know, like, when I have shows, they talk about my shows. So they were also very helpful to me just in the types of stories that they would print. I imagine it would have been much more difficult for me early on if I didn't have that kind of support, or if people were like hanging out in the bushes, like waiting to sneak a picture of me, you know, doing some heroin or something. So luckily I didn't have to deal with that. It's just all been like a love bomb. And, I needed that. I definitely needed that.
I mean, that story is a pretty unique one, isn't it? In the sense of suddenly, you know, an army of fans, as you say, from 30 years ago, come out to show you love and support. That's not going to be the case for everyone that hits rock bottom and then has to put one foot in front of the other. But still, I suppose that kind of the vulnerability, that kind of the willingness to connect and reach out and be with people. I love what you said about not wanting to let them down, because we do talk about that a lot. We do talk about how, you know, you've got to put yourself first. But actually, if you've got a low opinion of yourself and you don't care about yourself, then you've got to do something, haven't you? And then leaning on other people. I mean, what would your advice be to somebody who, I mean, would they even be listening to this podcast? You know, it's that, I'd say, what advice would you give someone who feels like they are coming towards rock bottom? Can you give anybody advice in that situation? Is it so difficult to get through to people?
I really spent time thinking about that after I listened to a few episodes of your podcast, and I was thinking about who your audience was, and I was thinking about, well, what are some things, because I want to be most helpful, right? Because, you know, I'm only here talking with you because people tell me that my story can be helpful. And I think you're right. It's like, if somebody isn't already worried about their addiction, are they tuning in? And if they're tuning in, they already know that they have a problem. And that's really what you need, is that internal compass that guides you towards sobriety. I just had a family member come out to LA and went into treatment and left. And the whole time that family member was here, I did everything I could to try to impart wisdom and give him advice and, you know, say things that would help. And through the experience, it helped me reach a conclusion. I don't know if it's a conclusion. I might change my mind. But I don't think there is anything that you can tell someone to help them recover if they don't want to recover. If you want to get clean, I think you'll find the tools, and you may stumble along the way. There may be a relapse, but that desire to get clean will lead you there. This recovery business, there's crazy statistics. Like, I think it's 94% of people that go to recovery stay clean for 1 year. And it also dawned on me that means only 6% of people in recovery want to get clean. So I don't know. I don't know that there's anything you tell somebody to make them want to get clean. If somebody wants to get clean, there's 100 things you can tell them. I you know, the best advice I can give to anybody, it would be to get a copy of the Big Book. and read that thing. The Big Book is such a prophetic piece of literature. I don't know anyone that's ever really earnestly sat and read it that wasn't like, oh my God, he's talking directly to me. So, yeah, I mean, that would be my advice. That is step zero, is to get yourself a Big Book.
Hi, this is Ben from Over the Influence, and I just wanted to take this opportunity in the middle of another fabulous episode of Over the Influence to tell you that I'd really like to meet you face to face. Well, Zoom to Zoom, because every week I host two Zoom calls with members from our fabulous community where we chat about anything and everything, from what we thought about this week's Over the Influence episode to celebrating someone in the community who's just hit a milestone. If you're listening to this on a Monday when it comes out, then we could be chatting tomorrow. I do Zooms every Tuesday morning and Wednesday lunchtime, same time every week. And if you're listening later in the week, then you could be meeting Shaz on Friday night. Or if you're an early bird, you can join her first thing Saturday morning Zoom with lots of other fresh, sober faces. Basically, we're doing these things all throughout the week because we love meeting you and hearing about how you're finding sobriety. So, if you'd like to meet us on Zoom and tell us your story, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk and sign up as an OTI community member now. Of course, by becoming an OTI community member, you're not just getting loads of stuff to help you with your own sobriety, like the Zoom calls, the forums, OTI chat, OTI on the go, the masterclasses, and all the other great things that you get as part of your membership. You're also supporting us and our mission here at Over the Influence, which is to encourage as many people as we can to try giving up alcohol by singing about the joys of sobriety from the rooftop. So if you're thinking of joining us, thank you. If you do join us, even bigger thank you. Look, it's great. Give it a try. And I can't wait to meet you on Zoom.
Sean, what's life like for you now?
My life is so good. You know, when I was in the midst of my drug use, my life literally was Murphy's Law. Anything that could go wrong went wrong. Anything, whether it was a pickup or a drop-off or anything. Anything, that, you know, if I was waiting on a letter in the mail, I wouldn't get it, you know. And now that I'm in tune with life more, good things just happen on a daily basis. It's not that that problems don't exist, but it's like when you're on drugs, it's like you're out of tune. So if you can imagine you have a musical instrument, you're out of tune. Any string you play is going to sound like shit. And so when you clean up, you become more in tune, and sort of any string you play just sounds good. That's the best analogy I can make.
I really like that. What instrument would you be, Sean?
Probably a sitar.
Oh, a sitar.
Nice. Exotic.
Ben, what would you be?
Oh, I'd definitely be like a big bass drum. Or, you know, just something big that you bang. That's what I'd probably be.
Okay, so we had a drum, a sitar. What about you, Sharon?
You know what, Sean? I'm going ukulele.
I've just realised what I've said. Because our community members watching have just been howling. I've said something big that you bang. You filthy people. Absolutely filthy minds, the OTI community members.
We're a very strange ethnic band we're going to have.
Yeah, bizarre. Yeah. I mean, it's got legs, is this, Sean? I can see it happening. The OTI band starring Sean Weiss.
So other than what I just said, Sharon, I'm focusing now on I'm putting together a stand-up act that is basically you know, kind of a motivational talk that's funny, where I can hopefully have my days be impactful while being funny at the same time. So I'm just hanging out in LA, and I go to these, I travel around the country doing signings. I want to make it over to your part of the world. So you guys got to send some letters and have me come out there.
That would be absolutely epic, because we are just in the process of organizing some IRL in real life community events. And you know what, Sean? You can come camping with us. We'll put the kettle on when you come over. We'll take you up some mountains.
I have never been camping in my life.
Get out.
I will not. I will get out with you in a tent on a campground.
Right. Well, listen to this. Just put a date in your diary. First weekend in September.
September 1. Okay. I'm putting it, Shaz.
I'll be back in touch.
I'm working it down, Shaz. Okay?
I know you are.
Sean, I'm going to be thinking about that now for weeks. What you said about... I mean, we've never really... This podcast has happened because we sat around a kitchen table in Liverpool and, you know, we wanted to talk about this kind of stuff. We never expected that it would be listened to across the globe in nearly every single country in the world, hundreds of thousands of downloads. We didn't expect to be here. Therefore, there's never really been a plan for it. We've never sat down in a boardroom and gone, right, let's think about our target audience for this podcast. You know, it's just...
It doesn't happen.
Everything's just kind of happened and rolled out naturally. And, you know, the community that we run now, that only happened because listeners were telling us that they wanted to meet each other and they wanted to connect. They felt alone. They wanted to connect with other people who were feeling the same way that they were. And so it's all just kind of happened. You know, it's just happened. And therefore, we've never really thought, you know, critically about who's listening to this. I think the thing for me is that all sorts of people are listening to this. It's people who are, you know, years and years sober, who like to listen to us because, I don't know, it's the connection, it's the, you know, the humour. People talk about how we have a laugh on this, but we're talking about serious subjects, but we're not scared to have a laugh as well. We've got people who are, you know, just starting out on their sobriety journeys, and for them it's really helpful to feel that there are other people who felt this way, that life does, you know, it can be tough at the beginning, but actually amazing things can happen when you remove just one thing. There are lots of people who are listening to this who are also what we class as sober curious, in the sense that they've got that little voice.
That gave me a good laugh when I first heard Sharon say that off the top. I've never heard that term, sober curious.
Yeah, it's a big one. It's sober curious. But it comes back to me to a quote that Desmond Tutu died at the end of last year. And so all his quotes are going around social media. And one that really stuck out to me, he said, "There comes a point where we need to stop just pulling people out of the river. We need to go upstream and find out why they're falling in." And that really hit home for me. And I think that's what I hope that this podcast does. I hope that we've got lots of different ideas of how we can do that. There's power in prevention. And I think that we really want to kind of, we want to feature stories from all sorts of different people, from all sorts of different backgrounds and all sorts of, you know, different levels of drinking. And, you know, some people had rock bottom, some people didn't. I think what we want to do is just say, look, you know, if you want to rethink your drinking, then you can. But then... I'd not thought about that before, but I had that voice. I didn't get to a point where my drinking was incredibly problematic. If I carried on drinking, it probably could have been. But I did have that voice, and I'm really glad that Over the Influence came into my life. I'm lucky, I'm blessed that Over the Influence came into my life when it did. Because actually, that little voice is easy to ignore, isn't it? And I wonder how long I was actually ignoring that voice for.
I think I ignored mine for about 10 years. It's there. It does start niggling. It takes a long time. And it's drowned out a lot of the time by everybody around you going, oh, you're fine. It's all fine. It's absolutely fine. And I think when you've actually got the courage and the balls and the bravery to go, nah, it's not really fine, is it? It's not all fine. Now I'm just going to try it a little bit differently. And that's when you listen to the voice. Exactly what Sean said before as well, Ben. Sean, you said that I think it doesn't matter if it's if we're talking about alcohol or opiates or painkillers or whatever it is, until that person decides that they are going to make a change at whatever point, you can sing in their face about sobriety until the day you die. It is impossible. That person needs to go, right, okay, let's give this a shot. And then when you do that and you start speaking to other people, for example, people that listen to this pod or within this community, and it's hands up and it's like, yeah, I get it. I know where you're coming from.
Yeah, I think that's very intelligent of you to see it as possibly a sort of addiction prevention tool. One of the best set of tools that I learned in treatment was they made us put together a relapse prevention packet. It was basically helping us figure out what it looks like when we're on the path to relapse way before it happens. So they want you to identify changes like in your behavior, like I stopped going to the gym, So now you know, well, shit, when I stop going to the gym, I better, like, focus on this because I'm heading towards relapse. And that was, like, just one of the huge tools that I was able to put in my bag and take with me. And I think if, you know, the podcast serves, how do you stop people from falling into the river when it comes to addiction? And I think the most obvious answer to that is you deal with the mental health problem that is most likely the root of the addiction. So if you can figure out how to do that in your platform, then, you know, you'd be doing a tremendous service. But I think it just speaks to how fun you guys are to listen to and how enjoyable the cast is, that, you know, you don't know exactly why people are listening. But, I mean, the AA community is really a tremendous tool for people. And I felt like if there was a podcast or a place that I could go to sort of check in without leaving my house, that would be sort of fun too. And I maybe felt like when I was listening to your podcast, there was sort of an element of that. Like, I felt like I was participating. I was a member of the sober community, but I was in the comfort of my own home. You know, does that make any sense, sort of?
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah.
It's funny because when people have listened to the podcast and then they get in touch with us via DM on social media, or they drop us an email, or they drop in into the community, so many people say to myself and Ben, oh my God, it's you. It's like meeting friends. And I think it's because we have come into people's homes or been out with them on a walk with the dog while we're in the race, or they're driving to work in the car and they listen week in, week out, week in, week out. And honestly, Sean, we have been banging on about this now for 2 years, oversharing our stories. The guests we have on the podcast is what makes it, because we talk to anybody and everybody. It's people like yourself from Hollywood. It might be somebody down the road that's overcome something massive. But the common theme is it's recovery. It's inspiration. It's showing that there is another way.
You know, drug addiction for me, the real problem was that it had turned me into a piece of shit as a person, right? So, I mean, I don't know what level of addiction any listener is at, but you know, really for me, that was also a huge part of my recovery, was being able to restore my integrity, regaining my sense of honesty. I can look in the mirror now and I feel good about the man that I am. I have not been able to do that for years. And that happened by, I guess, almost 3 years now of literally just doing the next right thing. So there's like these little slogans that you pick up, but they work, because your life is like an accumulation of your little actions, right, over a course of many days. So, you know, on day one or day three, okay, I didn't lie to anybody today, but after 3 years, I feel, you know, so that's another major part about recovery, is recovering who you were as a person. So I think that may be another reason why somebody might be listening, because when I was in my addiction, I caught a couple, you know, podcasts and shows that were like that. And it's because you feel so disconnected from your soul and like from who you are, that even like listening to some people talk about getting better helps, you know, even if you're about to like cop your next bag or get your next bottle, hearing someone, you know, for a year and a half, every time I got high, that was my last time I was getting high. That was my plan. Every time, this is my last bag, tomorrow I'm getting help. That one went on for a year and a half, you know, but I still had that urge to get clean.
That's exactly what this is all about. We never know who's listening. You know, everyone on the phone, I've got a podcast app. You never know who's listening to this. And I think your story and the fact that you're willing to talk about it so openly, thank you so much for being here with us today and being so open and honest. And the comments are coming in from our community members in the chat box saying exactly the same thing. I mean, we talk to the individual here at Over the Influence, but also it's about just trying to open up the narrative and kind of re-educate society as a whole as well. Me and Sharon are having a conversation on our premium podcast about the word alcoholic and why is it frowned upon? Why are alcoholics looked down on? Why are drug addicts looked down? And what I mean by that is an alcoholic that doesn't drink anymore should be celebrated. A drug addict that doesn't do drugs should be celebrated by society, not looked down on by society. They are doing something amazing by not drinking, by not doing drugs that they were addicted, they were physically and mentally addicted to. How are we not celebrating these people? Why are we looking down on them? And that's what we're here to do, and we can only do that because people like you are willing to come on and share your story. So thank you so much for coming on today. Sorry, Shaz, you usually do the outros, don't you, love? I've just taken your job there.
You know what, and that's, you've just done it. I don't really need to say anything else. Sean, I echo everything Ben has just said there. Again, thank you for sharing so honestly. It's been great to chat, but I think what I'm going to take away from this episode of the podcast, it's two things. It's the potential of an OTI band with Sean on his sitar, me on the ukulele, and Ben on his big thing, whatever that might be. I'm going to hope it's a cello or something like that. And then the possibility of, at the back end of summer, Sean coming to the UK to take part in an Over the Influence social event as our guest of honour. I'll provide the tent. Sean, you bring the baked beans, all right?
Hey, listen, Sharon, just because I was homeless at one point doesn't mean I'm willing to be homeless to go to the OTI event. I'm just kidding. I'll stay in
this. This is fun. Watch this space. We'll be in touch. Sean Weiss, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Same here. Okay, bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Over the Influence. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And if you did enjoy it, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a rating and a review with your podcast provider, it would be much appreciated. Thank you so much. I just wanted to quickly share with you as well, just one aspect of our online community. There are all sorts included within your membership. We've got forums, we have got masterclasses that happen. You get the premium podcast included as part of your membership. But one of the key features within the platform is the OTI chat. This is a bit like WhatsApp, except you don't have to give any personal contact details. You can contact other members that might be on the same day count as you. You might lead quite similar lives. You might find yourself connecting with people that you've never considered connecting with before. But the one thing you've all got in common is that you are trying to change your relationship with alcohol. It's a fantastic place. It's all about support, connection, and motivation. You can find out more about what we do at overtheinfluence.co.uk or drop us an email. Any questions at all, we are here to help. OTI HQ at overtheinfluence.co.uk. Thank you so much. There'll be more next week.